and tell me the arguments in favor and tell me the arguments against it from your standpoint. And he did. And again, I have a relationship of trust and understanding with the police chief. For God's sake, we better hope I do. And he gave me his thoughts and his concerns, and I heard them, but it was my decision.
At the beginning of his testimony, Chief O'Day said it won't make us safer.
In and of itself, it won't make us safer. But having information, why do you think I did this? Do you think I did this because I like the FBI? I don't. Do you think I did this because I approve of what the federal government's been doing over the last decades and wars without cause and torture? No, I don't believe in any of those things. But I also see what happened in Copenhagen, where citizens murdered other citizens. Okay? That's terrorism, and it's deadly, and it's the worst civil liberty loss of all, to be killed by someone. So I woke up lots of nights wondering if we're in danger like Paris was, or Copenhagen was, or Boston was, and where innocent civilians got killed by terrorists. Those things happened, right? We all know that. So the question is, for me, if exchanging information with the FBI might prevent one death, do I have any moral grounds to not communicate with them?
I think you have moral grounds to make a decision based on rational thought and so communicate that clearly.
What's the non-rational thought about looking at the facts that people were murdered in those three cities? People were murdered there, Joe. You know that.
Does the JTTF make us safer or not?
There are
bad people in the world. The JTTF, according to most people's estimation, according to what I believe about open relationships and communication with groups like the Muslims will not talk to the FBI.
I know there's a cost.
So there's a possibility that will make us less safe.
There is. There is a possibility that it will make us less safe.
That's what I'm saying. What can you tell the public besides
that? I believe, based on my values and my judgment, that we are marginally better off by exchanging information with an organization, even though it's an organization that we have a lot of doubts about.
Is there something rational that you can say about that?
Rational? I think that is rational.
Objective, actual statements.
Information is helpful when you're doing police work, and this might give us a little bit more of it.
Is it a chance it makes us less safe, and is it a chance it makes it more safe?
It's a chance.
We're looking for facts.
You're asking for speculation. Now, I'll speculate both ways. There is a chance it will make us less safe, and there's a chance that it will make us more safe. And I think marginally it's worth the risk to try to be more safe with more information. And I'm going to keep an eye on it every step of the way.
Can you say something about your decision process?
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
I said it three times.
At that point, the KABU reporter was asked to leave the mayor's office and told that he lacked objectivity and was not a real journalist. While we at KABU agree that the reporter went outside the bounds of objectivity and became emotional about the issues, we felt it was important to air the exchange in its entirety so KABU listeners can hear the mayor's responses. That was Mayor Charlie Hale speaking this past Friday.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening. This is KABU Labor Radio, of, by, and for the working class. Your hosts tonight are Fernando Gapacin and Ann McDonald. As many people might know, this is the 50th anniversary. Actually, yesterday was the 50th anniversary of the March in Selma. And the struggle for the value of black lives continues. We wanted to give a brief report on the Healthcare for All Oregon demonstration in Salem on February 11th. Roughly 500 of us gathered there to advocate for the passage of two pieces of legislation. One was House Bill 2828. Which was passed last session, but this session we're trying to get some funding to promote a study of four models of how we could get universal health care for all Oregonians. It was voted out of the health care committee of the House unanimously and is now in a subcommittee at the in the Wage and Means Committee of the House. We're urging you to call your state senators and representatives in support of HB 2828. We were also there to support Senate Bill 631, which is the health care single payer measure. There'll be hearings in April on it, and it now has 27 sponsors in the Senate. We wanted to make sure that we identified, made our station identity. It's KBOO Portland, and it's 90.7 FM.
Yes. Hello, this is Anne McDonald. We have some guests with us this evening from the Portland Airport and also from SEIU, Meg Neamy, president of SEIU Local 49. Also, James Davidson and Joseph Price, two workers at the Portland Airport, are here to discuss some labor disputes that have been ongoing. And hopefully we can really tackle these issues. Hi, Meg. So can you give us some background on what's going on with this?
Sure. So pleased to be here tonight. Thanks so much for inviting us to KBOO to talk about what's happening at PDX. So our union, SEIU Local 49, we represent around 10,000 workers. And of those workers, we represent some of the janitors that clean the airport. And through the efforts of having those janitors in our union, our members started to hear from other workers that worked at the airport that didn't have a voice on the job and saw that the standards and the rights that the janitors who are in our union that they had were better than what the non-union workers were experiencing themselves. And so, you know, through that, there's been an effort where there's been a lot of discussion amongst airport workers. A strong majority of the subcontracted out workers who do things like push wheelchairs and assist passengers, who flag in planes, who fuel those planes, who move baggage and handle our baggage, those types of workers have been organizing to form a union with our union, Local 49. And then they reached out to their coworkers and did a survey, which was really enlightening. I'd love to share some of the results of that survey about what the conditions are like at the airport, including the fact that a strong majority of people are just paid at minimum wage, that 85% only receive a wage increase when the minimum wage goes up, that 64% report they're living month to month with no savings overall, that 78% lack any paid holidays, and 61% say that high turnover is a concern for them. And so they moved that survey with their coworkers and now are working to get the Port of Portland and the Port Commissioners to adopt a policy on minimum standards for the contractors that work at the port. Because these employees work for subcontracted out companies that often work either directly for the port or for the airline consortium. And so right now we're working to try to get the port to establish a set of minimum standards.
So it's a mixed work site right now of represented and unrepresented workers. So how many workers are currently unrepresented?
The workers that are organizing with our union are around 700 non-union workers.
And that's the baggage handlers and the fuelers, and that's TSA agents. When you go to the airport, the people that you see working there are people that are struggling to make ends meet.
It's for our union, it's not the TSA agents, but it is the passenger service assistants, okay. Which is actually Joseph, who's with me today, is one of those passenger service assistants that works for Huntley, and the baggage folks and the folks that you see that have the flashlights that guide in planes when folks are on planes, as well as some of the cleaners that clean the airplanes when they come and turn around at PDX.
This is really heavy duty work and really important work. For the security, I mean, think about flying, and some people get nervous. And to think that the guys out there doing those jobs are, you know, just struggling when they're keeping us safe in what can be a stressful travel situation. And Portland was voted the country's best airport 2 years in a row by Travel and Leisure. And also Condé Nast, Traveler magazine, had Portland on its top 10 list. So it's a well-known and well-liked, well-loved airport. So it's really surprising that so many people are having a hard time there. And I've got to admit, it sounds a little bit like I work at the Oregon Zoo, which is owned by Metro, and it was a union, non-union work site. And then the unorganized workers had years of strife. And finally, we kind of teamed up with the represented workers there and got organized and got a contract. So I look at your story, and I'm very optimistic. I've seen it work.
We always love to hear success stories and good news. No, exactly. I mean, Portland is voted the best airport, you know, in the country. And what we want to see is we want to have PDX be the best airport for everybody that works there, as well as everybody who flies through our airport.
Would you like to see worker standards, you know, pay, benefits, that sort of thing on you know, those ratings? Like, you know, if it's a great airport, it should include those things.
That would be great.
So, also here tonight, we have, James Davidson, who is a ramper. James, what is a ramper? I don't know what that is.
If you, look out onto the, runway when you're at the airport and you see those people loading the airplanes, we're the person that makes sure that you get to your trip with your luggage, with an airplane intact and on time.
So that's crucial. So every day somebody doesn't lose luggage, they've got people like you to thank for that, right?
Right.
And what are some of the issues that are really important to you? That why are you struggling with this?
Worker retention is very important to me, and I think the minimum standards would significantly help us draw quality employees to our profession and keep them around so that when you come to the airport, you have the best experience possible.
James, can you talk a little bit about how long you've worked there and what kind of turnover you do see?
I've been there for 16 years, and we have about 80% turnover per year.
Was it 80%?
80% turnover per year in my contracting company, yes.
Wow, that's...
That's so it's huge. It's surprising. Yeah.
Every year, it's a whole new flock of people, and experience matters wherever you're working. Just knowing who you're working with, knowing the work site, and knowing the other people there.
People come to the airport and they say, "You have an exciting job, and you must be really excited about being here." I was like, "Well, you know, it's not that great, and the pay's not that great, and you'd be surprised what we're making here."
So, something that I hear, you know, complaints from people, you know, well, if you don't like your job, why don't you get a new job? So what is it you like about this job? You know, what do you look forward to?
Well, every day is different. It's an exciting, fast place to work. You get to meet people from all over the world. It's just, it's like the world comes to you and you get to visit it on your terms every single day.
Well, so you see people from everywhere and you get to all walks of life.
Asians, Africans, Europeans, Hispanics, they all come here and they all want to be part of what is Portland.
Yeah, and part of something special.
Yes.
So Joseph Price is here today, also an airport worker. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do and what your experiences have been at the airport?
Yes, I work for Huntley. I'm a PSA agent. I push wheelchairs at times, and I'm also, line coordinating, where I separate the first class from the general boarding. I have to check boarding passes. So I enjoy mingling with people, you know, people person. I enjoy that. And basically that's what I do.
Important part of streamlining the visitor experience.
Yes.
Excellent. And what are some of your concerns that you've seen at your work site?
Well, it's same as with James, is high turnover with personnel. With you know, because the pay is minimum wage, and this company only have given increases when it was, you know, mandatory by the state. when they increased the minimum wage, that the only increases we received. And I've been working there 4.5 years now.
4.5 years without a raise, with just making minimum wage.
Yes. When I started, we did have a vacation. They took that away, you know. And when you're out sick, you know, if you don't know who to contact, you know, you won't know that you can be compensated for some of your time that you have been out sick, according to how long you've been out sick. So it's like, you know, you have to know things, and they don't make it known to you. You just find out through the grapevine, practically.
So you do get the earned sick days that the city of Portland passed recently?
Well, I guess that would be something that maybe they would come out maybe before that, maybe after that, because I'm not aware that Portland had passed the sick days thing. But it's there. If you know, like I said, you have to ask for it.
And that's, I mean, that's one of the top places, I would imagine, where you wouldn't want your workers coming to work sick, being exposed to thousands of people from all over the world every day. I read, so Unite Here did a survey of over 100 concession workers last fall and found 1 in 4 on food stamps and 1 in 6 on Medicaid. And that's while the executive director, Bill Wyatt, has a public employee salary is almost $400,000. And I guess this isn't really a question so much as speculation, you know, that, you know, our workers who have to be on public assistance, is that, you know, taxpayer subsidizing, you know, Bill Wyatt's wages, excuse me, at the port. It doesn't, there was a social equity proposal that is going to be voted on in April. Megan, can you say a little something about that?
Yeah, no, I mean, we did in the survey we did of Portland subcontracted out workers at the airport, we found that over 28% of them rely on some level of public assistance in order to make ends meet. And you don't really think about the airport and think about poverty, because I think about, you know, something like somebody like Alaska Airlines that's making millions of dollars and operating at our port. And so it is a major concern. And we also have a number of Pacific Islanders that work at the port, and many of them are not eligible for any levels of public subsidy based on their status. And so that's another issue that we're working on the COFA bill to try to make sure that they can get health care coverage here in Oregon. But what overall we're asking the port to do is to say, take a look. You have a number of subcontractors that are operating at the Port of Portland. And right now there's not a set of minimum standards that the port really takes a look at to oversee what kind of contractors that they want to have at the port. So we're asking them to have standardized permitting requirements so that there's the same set of standards that each company that works there or contracts there has to have, that they have improved safety, training, and equipment standards. You know, we just filed some OSHA complaints with workers at Prospect Services because they are cleaning airplanes and don't have gloves that don't rip and don't have the proper equipment to deal with the bodily fluids that they have to handle in the airport and in the airplanes. To have something on workforce retention. So as James talked about the fact that 80% turnover with his company, you know, there a lot of workers have a concern that impacts the safety at the port. If you have longtime employees who really know what they're doing, it can improve safety. And then labor harmony. So, you know, how do you make sure that the workers are being listened to and that there's harmonious relationships between the contractor and the workers? Another thing is whistleblower protection, because I know, you know, I certainly want to have a workforce out at the airport that feels like they can speak up and say if they see something that is a safety concern or a way that things things could be handled better. And I want to make sure that they don't feel afraid for their job if they're going to speak up and raise those issues. And then the other piece of the minimum standards is a living wage and health care provisions. So the Port of Portland, was not dealing with these issues at all until workers brought them forward repeatedly at Port Commission hearings. They've now said that they are considering a policy. They were supposed to vote on that policy in March. They've now kicked that down the road to April. We're really hoping that they take all of these elements of a set of minimum standards seriously and include them in a policy.
And is there a current policy right now that's been written that that includes everything that you've described?
There's no policy at all.
So what they're voting on doesn't really reflect what the workers are really asking for.
No, there really isn't a policy on how the port deals with the subcontracted out agencies, even though there's policies at the at Multnomah County, the city of Portland has policies, the state of Oregon has policies. I mean, you look at every other public entity around and there are policies on how they deal with this, but there's not at the Port of Portland.
Is that like an artifact of, past practices, like something they've done before that's always kind of been that way? Or is that a decision? Is it overlooked? Like, how does it's over 500, right, companies that are, and there's no set of standards that they're looking for necessarily when they invite these companies to, serve at the airport.
I mean, I think that overall this is a lot of the work that folks do is behind the scenes and under the wing and out on the tarmac, and it's almost invisible. And it's really thanks to the courage of workers like James and Joseph that are standing up and saying, we want to be heard and we need to be valued as part of this port. But I think that it was easy for the port to ignore the work and almost pretend like it was invisible until workers started speaking up.
So the Port of Portland, Steve Johnson, a spokesman for them, said that our real focus right now is just fully understanding the concerns, and then we'll look at any appropriate next steps after that. So James and Joseph, what are for you an obvious first step that the port could take tomorrow that would benefit you as workers immediately?
They protection and a cover for us to have an opportunity to organize and be represented without the fear of retaliation from our employers. It is one of the greatest challenges for me.
Just the right to organize.
Yes, and I agree with that. And also,
I'm sorry, it's easy to say the right to organize, but it's harder to create that umbrella where you actually have that opportunity without the fear of retaliation.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I agree with that, and I think also it just need to be, they just need to just stop, dragging their heels, dragging their feet around and just go on and do what they know they need to do. And I think they just keep putting it off, and they don't, it's just blatantly they don't care. And I mean, they don't care about the people, as long as the stuff get done and no major accidents, nothing has happened, everything is fine. But it's not fine. And I think someone who listening, who know anybody who works at Condé Nast or either Travel and Leisure magazine, this need to be an article they need to read also about the Portland, about PDX, about the airport. It's number one. It also is number one in neglecting the people who make it number one. And I think that's need to be heard, need to be read about.
Something I've experienced with organizing is high turnover is a real challenge. So people, face these issues, and a lot of times the issues that bring them to try to get organized also kind of push them out. I've been hearing more recently about these efforts. Is this kind of a thing that's been simmering for a while and is starting to get heated up, or was there an impetus, some event that happened that got you guys excited about it?
It's been simmering for a really long time. We just, because of the
SEIU.
Because ACIU, they've given you an opportunity to organized, and they've given me the background and the knowledge to assert my rights in the port. And so I'm taking advantage of it. And you're right, turnover is a huge problem for organizing. The people who have the ability to go do, and the people who can't leave are so scared that they might lose their job that they're afraid to participate. So I'm hoping to change that. I'm hoping to provide some leadership and giving those people who don't have that opportunity the opportunity to prosper from the wealth that the port brings to this community.
You see, it's something that needs doing, so shoot, pick it up and get started doing it, right?
It's my turn to do it, yes.
Yeah, right on. Right on.
Other unions, I think I've been out to the airport 3 times now, and there are other unions who are also organizing at the airport as well. Is that correct?
That's right. HERE, or the Hotel and Restaurant Employees Union, is actually organizing the concessionaires, the folks that work in, you know, the restaurant, Starbucks kind of roses and those areas, has actually been organizing the concessionaires. And in addition, there are a lot of union members that exist at the airport as well. You know, you have the pilots, a lot of the flight attendants are represented by the flight attendants union, and there are a lot of union members that also work at the port.
I know that Jobs with Justice has mobilized a number of, different unions, different community groups to come out and support. Is there one, a message that you'd want the community to hear that's going to, you know, that why should they be out there really supporting you? And the other one is, what can our listeners do to aid and assist? Because this is clearly one of those very important campaigns, along with, you know, 15 Now, the fight for sick leave and health care. So what can we do to help?
Yeah, that's great. We would love to have KBOO listeners be more involved and engaged in our campaign. One big thing is just stay connected with us. So we have a Facebook page, which is Facebook/Our Airport, and you can find us there. And so just like that page, and then it will talk about actions and activities where listeners could come out and support the airport workers as they continue to take action to pass minimum standards, as well as to organize to gain their union and improve things. Because I think that, you know, when you hear, you know, you heard it from Joseph, who's making minimum wage after working at the airport for several years. Some workers have worked there for 12 years and are still only making minimum wage. And so improving, fighting for 15 is another way to support workers, but ultimately, workers want to have a way to advocate for themselves so they can speaking up about what's most important. Because I think this really, having this high turnover does impact the potential safety of our airport. Other things you guys want to add about what folks could do to support? It's good?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
If you see a worker on site, give him a high five.
Yeah.
Show him some solidarity.
Well, just that I've worked union before, and this is the first time I've been in a situation where getting the union started. It always was, you know, already involved, already was going on for years when I started in the union. And I always, you know, you have rights and you have benefits and you get paid more money. I mean, nothing is perfect, but it's better than what it is, what it is as non-union. And, you know, I hope the community, you know, look at this and, you know, maybe they can drop a note or, you know, phone book, the Wyatt, the Bill Wyatt, or, you know, the committee that he's on and all of them, you know, just call them and, you know, let them know that, hey, you know, you need to do something. You're the number one airport. You're not hurting for anything for you, but people there who works there, who makes it the number one airport, are hurting, and they need to be compensated. They need to have benefits, and they need to be respected as human beings.
Joseph, do you think that having had prior experience with being in an organized work site, and now you know, you have this effort to organize this work site you're at now, And does that change your understanding and your maybe your appreciation for the role of unions?
Yes, it does. It does, because like I said, I never, you know, when I worked in it, they was already involved. So now at the grassroots, at the bottom, where we can start, you know, do something, you know, be in the at the bottom and start up, you know, at the to get the union together. And I hadn't had this opportunity. I want this to do this. It's like a civil rights thing, you know. You have to get in there and, you know, don't back down.
Well, that's a very inspiring story. I'd like to thank everybody. Meg Namey, president of SEI Local 49, James Davidson, and Joseph Price for joining us here tonight.
Thanks so much for having us, KBOO.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much.
KBOO Labor Radio, by, for the working class. Thank you.
You forgot, of the working class. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline. Thanks for listening.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Taking you to faraway places,
Simon says,
and bringing them home to you. It's the Tiki Cha-Cha Club, KBOO's all-vinyl guilty pleasure. Monday nights, midnight to 1 a.m. on 90.7 FM stereo and around the world at kboo.fm.
Tune into KBOO every weekday at 7 p.m. for Hard Knock Radio. News and views from a hip-hop perspective with Davey D.